She was born in silence, her childhood was as dark as the night. She should have been the perfect assassin, but her heart was kind inside. When she made her first kill, she ran and hid till Gotham City was in sight. She wanted her life to start new. She wanted, thanks to Babs, we all can see a brand new Batgirl has been born. It'll fight evil till it's gone. She's found a purpose after so, so long. A brand new Batgirl has been born. Yes, it has.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Staley, and welcome to Silent Night, the Cassandra Cain podcast, following the ever-continuing adventures of my choice for the next Batman, Cassandra Cain. Well, we are just a short ways from the Birds of Prey movie, and of course, I mentioned the last episode that I was going to talk about the trailer. Well, since then, we have now had two trailers, as well as a little bio thing written out explaining each of the main characters' looks and personalities. Anyone that knows Cassandra Cain can probably figure that I am not thrilled. The trailer in itself, the first one I should say, didn't make me particularly happy. Because I watched it and I thought, well, it's out of context, but this doesn't seem to be very much like Cassandra Cain. But I wanted to give them benefit of the doubt. However, the bio about her straight up says that she is a street urchin pickpocket who steals something from Black Mask and thus gets pulled into the story that way. Because yeah, that sounds exactly like Cassandra Cain. I don't think I'd be as frustrated about it if not for the fact that I will be the first to admit Cassandra Cain is a very niche character. If you're not a comic fan, you're not going to know her. I fully accept this. Which leads me to believe that they included the character as a nod to the comic fans. But if they're going to do that, why would they make her so different from what the character actually is? I mean, there's creative license, and then there's slapping a name on a completely different character. It is very, very annoying. I honestly don't know if I'm going to go see this movie. Mostly because I don't want to help give money to a movie that gives this poor of a representation of Cassandra Cain, especially since if I go, I know I'm not going to enjoy it because I'm going to spend the entire time just being frustrated over the fact that they're not doing the character right. I think the thing that scares me most, and a friend of mine brought this up, if the movie does well, he could see them changing Cassandra Cain's character in the comic to better fit her movie counterpart. And what's really depressing is I could see them doing this, and oh, I dread the idea of them doing that to her. I mean, I'm not particularly thrilled with some of the things going on with her as is, but I think that's enough talking about the negative things. I'm going to take a quick podcast promo break, and then we will be back with the first of our two stories that we'll be talking about today. We'll be right back.
The Fire and Water Podcast Network is a collection of super friends plus Shag. So what could be more appropriate than a podcast about the super friends? It's For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast, a read-through show about the classic DC comic book series covering all 47 issues of the original run, plus a few surprises. Hosted by me, Rob Kelly, and a rotating group of my super friends. Coming soon from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
It all looks good to me.
And we're back. Today we're starting with Azrael, Agent of the Bat, number 60. Cover dated January 2000. Released on November 10th, 1999, titled Evacuation, written by Denny O'Neill,
penciled by Roger Robison, inked by James Pascoe, colored by Rob Rowe and Alex Blayart, and lettered by Ken Bresnick. So our story opens with Batman ordering Azrael and Batgirl to get Innocence out of Joker's territory before he moves in to attack. Az wonders aloud how they'll get all those people out and asks what Batgirl intends to do. She pantomimes several attacks, insinuating that she'll watch Az's back. Meanwhile, Barbara worries about Batgirl possibly confronting the Joker. Nightwing assures her that Batgirl is well-trained and can handle herself. Conversation then turns to the support coming from the mainland to open No Man's Land. Joker, on the other hand, is just waiting for Batman to make a move. As he ponders, one of his thugs mentions idolizing him and wanting to be just like him. Back with our heroes, Az and Batgirl are working on getting people out, mostly successfully, though they miss a girl sleeping as they continue their way across. Some Joker thugs, along with the Crown Prince of Crime himself, appear, and the battle begins, our heroes holding their own. When the Joker starts to move in, Batgirl meets him despite Azrael telling her not to mess with him. However, she rather easily takes him down. Az then notices that it's not the actual Joker, but a fake. I believe it to be the fanboy that we saw a little earlier, although it doesn't actually say that it is. Meanwhile, at Leslie Tompkins' clinic, a couple notices that their daughter, the girl from earlier, is missing. Back at the plot, Az and Batgirl find a man that has given them some grief a little earlier looking for his assistant. They send him to the safe zone and go to look for the assistant. The actual Joker, at that same time, has found the missing daughter and decides to use her as a hostage, despite Harley being a bit worried for her safety. Azrael and Batgirl arrive, irritating Joker, who was hoping for Batman himself. Az believes this to be another fake, but the Clown Prince of Crime has no idea what he's talking about. He's so confused that he doesn't notice our heroes take the girl and leave with her. The end. Rather surprisingly abrupt ending aside, let's get into the details, starting with the cover. We have Joker holding our little girl, although with different colored hair than she has in the actual book, while Batgirl swoops down on him and Azrael is being bombarded by some of Joker's goons. Now, interesting little thing here is Batgirl, as she's swooping down, her cape is shaped to look like wings, which is really cool looking, but I'm pretty sure her cape would not actually form like that. So, not really so much a mistake, just kind of odd. So a little bit of a typo here when Nightwing and Barbara are talking. Nightwing says to her, "She's highly trained and completely competent. She's trained that at the gas station." I'm pretty sure it's supposed to say she proved that at the gas station, but, you know, little typo there, it happens. Joker's hair in this. Depending on the angle, you get some interesting looks from Joker here. You either got a rather wild pompadour, or he looks like a racer head. Or Kid and Play. One of the two. It's an interesting look, to say the least. Yeah, I don't know who this... I'm not sure who this guy is that has this obsession with Joker. Again, I think he's the one we later see dressed up as Joker, but they don't actually say that, so I'm not sure. And then we got this Mr. Slinkery guy, who I mentioned him, you know, briefly. He's pretty much your typical, we're in the middle of a war zone during No Man's Land, we're towards the end of No Man's Land. But I'm going to nitpick about the fact that this window does not look safe and is not up to code. Yes, there could be the fact that we've had nobody, you know, maintaining this place. But no, this is not up to code. And even though there's a lot of danger right now and the Joker is coming, I don't care. We have to get this fixed.
guy annoys me. But yeah, when we do see our fake Joker, it is clearly not the real one. I mean, his hair is completely different from the eraser head pompadour thing I was talking about earlier. This guy's hair is just regular slick back. It's obvious from the start that this was not the real Joker. But yeah, again, they don't really say who this is. So I do like how Harley, at this point, even though she's, you know, evil, psychotic, and worships the Joker, she's still concerned about the welfare of the little girl. Obviously, Joker is not, because, well, he's the Joker. And I love the fact that when Azrael suggests that he's another fake, the Joker's just confused, and he's so busy trying to figure out what they're talking about, that Azrael and Batgirl just walk off with the girl. They don't even try to beat him up. They just take the girl and leave. And the Joker is so distracted, he doesn't even notice it. It is actually kind of funny. That's about all I've got on this first issue. So we're going to take another little podcast promo break, and then we will be back with story number two.
The time is out of joint.
The time is out of joint.
The time is out of joint.
The year is 1994, or 1944, or maybe 2994. Time is under threat, and history is falling apart. Who will survive this crisis, and how will history be changed for those that do? Zero Hour Strikes takes you back to that DC Comics crossover and covers the entire story, issue by issue, tie-in by tie-in, as the DC Universe goes down to zero. Join Bass and Siskoid at fireandwaterpodcast.com or on iTunes, Zero Hour Strikes, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Remember Legion.
And we're back. And now we're moving out of the early noughts and right into 2015 with Batman and Robin Eternal number 1. Cover dated December 2015, release date October 7th, 2015. Written by James Tynion IV with plots by Scott Snyder, penciled by Tony Salvador Daniel, inked by Sandu Florea, colored by Tamiu Morey, and lettered by Tom Napolitano. So we open in Cairo several years ago. A family is walking when a mysterious gunman shoots the parents, somewhat like Thomas and Martha Wayne. We then move to Gotham in the past and get a quick shot of Batman and Dick Grayson Robin before moving to the present with secret agent Dick Grayson chasing a druggie on a futuristic motorcycle. His contact, Poppy, chastises him because the druggie is not related to his mission, and he's running out of time to complete it. Backup arrives in the form of Red Hood, who leads the druggie to the roof, where Red Robin is waiting for him. The combined skills of the three former Robins take care of the guy. We then get a quick bit of exposition. Bruce's amnesia, Jim Gordon as Robot Batman, or Bat Bunny, as some called it, and Dick's work as a Spiral agent. Tim suggests they try working together more often, but Dick and Jason are unsure with how much Gotham has changed. We move on to our new Robot Batman on the trail of Bluebird, who's managed to elude him numerous times despite the expensive tech at his disposal. On this occasion, however, he catches her. Gordon plans to confiscate her tech and costume, not wanting her to get hurt trying to play vigilante, but she manages to freeze his suit and escape. Meanwhile, at the Gotham State University Tower of Enlightenment grand opening, Dick is undercover investigating a potential bomb. He begins reminiscing about one of his first cases as Robin against Scarecrow, where Crane had been helping the GCPD with a case, while being the true villain all along. Scarecrow had escaped them that night, and Dick started to learn of Batman's obsessions with stopping criminals. Before his reminiscing can continue,
Dick is confronted by a group of schoolchildren telling him that she wanted to kill him right here due to the significance. They begin taunting him about not being good enough for Batman, thus being replaced by Jason. They draw guns on him, but he manages to acrobat his way out as they warn him that Orphan is coming for him. As the mysterious Orphan begins to enter and the kids mention Dick being a mistake that Mother has to clean up, the former Boy Wonder jumps out of a window to escape. He gets to Poppy's van, only to discover that she, too, is working for Mother. She shoots him in the shoulder as he lunges onto his motorcycle and drives off. Poppy contacts Orphan, and they discuss the planned elimination of the others before any of them can make contact with her. Dick tries to contact any of the other Bat Family members when he's kicked off his motorcycle. The assailant, while not named here, is none other than Cassandra Cain, making her first proper appearance in 4 years. Dick tries to fight her, but she rather easily wipes the floor with him. He notices that she's holding back from killing him. When he asks why, she steps back, simply says, "Mother," and hands him a bat-labeled thumb drive before disappearing. Elsewhere, Harper Row returns home and takes off her Bluebird attire when she's confronted by Orphan, who says she must die. At the Batcave, Dick asks the computer for information on Mother or Orphan, but the computer has nothing. He inserts the drive, and a list comes up claiming all of Mother's children must die before Phase 3. Jason, Tim, Harper, Cassandra, and Dick himself are all on the list. Then a hologram of Batman appears, speaking of his failure, giving the thumb drive to Cassandra and the threat Mother is. We return to Cairo several years ago, where we see the person who shot the boy's parents was Batman himself. To be continued. Now, the cover to this story actually is really cool looking. It's kind of got a split screen effect with Dick Grayson in the front. On one side, it's him as Robin with Batman next to him. On the other side, it's him as a spy with Red Robin, Bluebird, and Red Hood. There's also an alternate cover, though, that just has an image of him as Robin along with Batman swooping down from the rooftops. It's a nice enough cover. I think the regular image really does a lot more in this case. They were not subtle about the Bruce Wayne's parents reference. As we have our little family coming out of the theater, they go down a dark alley, and then the parents are shot. Not really subtle at all. We get a nice quick little reference to Dick Grayson as Robin, although I realize it doesn't work nowadays, but there's just something about Dick Grayson not having the shorts and the little booties that it just doesn't feel right without that, even if it doesn't really work in the current day and age. Of course, typical Red Hood running around shooting his guns like crazy. I'm actually amazed he was willing to stay non-lethal with the guy. And of course, typical Jason wants to take underage Tim Drake out for a drink. That is totally the post-crisis Jason Todd. I do specify that because I know I'm currently doing DC 50 years ago, of course, on my other podcast, and we're looking at the pre-crisis stuff, and we're not even close to Jason Todd, but I know that the Jason Todd of pre-crisis is very different from the Jason Todd that we have nowadays. I kind of like the twist with Poppy, because ever since they started the Dick Grayson super spy stuff, they'd had him working with Poppy, so it was kind of a surprising twist to find out that she was actually a villain the whole time. I'm interested in seeing where this goes, if anywhere, or if it's just a plot that they end up dropping. Admittedly, I've only read some of Batman and Robin Eternal previously,
so a lot of this will be new to me. And of course, we get our typical fights between the villains.
I don't take orders from you.
When actually all she said was that, hey, we need to remove the others from the equation. That's not giving an order. That's just making a statement. I've never understood that aspect of characters in these stories, although there are people like that in real life. If anyone makes anything that could be seen as a suggestion or command, they'll take it as, are you giving me orders? Annoying.
I love this image of Cassandra that we get, because it's almost a complete full page
splash, excuse me, with Cassandra just standing there, kind of doing the Captain Morgan thing with one leg, and just looks really epic. I do, and this is even now, miss seeing the bat on her chest, and I don't think it would bother me here if not for the fact that she still doesn't have one. I do love how they showcase her abilities with her kind of analyzing his weaknesses as he's coming at her, and she's able to easily take him down. Nice little cliffhanger with Harper and Orphan. Gonna have to see next issue what they have planned for that. And speaking of cliffhangers, of course, the big shock of Batman killed that boy's parents? What's going on? Was he brainwashed? Was he evil at one point? Obviously, people who've already read these stories know that answer, but for somebody like myself, I don't believe he was evil at one point. I'm not really sure what story they're going to go with, but I'm definitely intrigued. This was a fun little story. All right, that's all I've got for this episode. Next time, we're going to take a look at two more, another one from Post-Crisis and another one from the New 52. So, until next time.
You've been listening to Silent Night, the Cassandra Cain podcast. Feedback for the show can be left at CassandraCainCast@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at StaleDog with two G's because I was a teen in the 90s. If you want to help us out, leave a review on iTunes because it gets more eyes on the show. Find more geeky fun at my YouTube channel, Mike's Geek World. All characters and music used in the show are copyrighted to their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Thank you for listening, and come back next time for another episode of Silent Night, the Cassandra Cain Podcast.